चार श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोपीनाथ स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। श्री श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय, श्री धाम की जय, श्री मायापुर धाम की जय, श्री श्री मथुर धाम की जय, श्री श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, पक्की देवी की जय, अंग माई की जय, जमुनी माई की जय, गौर प्रेमानंदी हरे हरे बोल, शंभुवीर भक्त वृंद की जय, ओ ग्लोरियस द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरियस द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरियस द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरियस श्री श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग नारायण नमस्कृत चम नारम चैवम नरोत्तमम देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीराय नास्त्वापरेषु अपदेशेषु नित्यं भगवत् सेवायां भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 11th chapter, 23rd text. Svayam cha guru bir vipray sadarasta virai rabi ashir bir yujmano nyar Paribhischa Vishatpuram Swayam Cha Guru Birvi Pray Sarai Stavi Rai Rabi Ashir Bir Yujyamano Nyar Paribhischa Vishatpuram Swayam Cha Guru Birvi Pray Sadaraya Stavirai Rabi Ashir Bir Yujamano Nyar Vandibish Chavishat Puram Swayam Chaguru Bir Vipray Sadaraya Stavirai Rabi Ashir Bir Yujamano Nyar Vandibish Chavishat Puram Others? Anyone? Synonyms or word meanings? Svayam, repeat Svayam. Himself. Cha. Also. Guru Bihi. By elderly relatives. Vipray. By the Brahmins. Sadarahai. With their wives. Stavirai. Invalid. Api, also. Ashir bihi, by the blessings of. Yujamanha, being praised by. Anyahai, by others. Pandivihi, admirers. Cha, and. Abhishat, entered. Puram, the city. Translation. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid Brahmins and their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praise the glories of the Lord, responsibly. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid Brahmins with their wives. All offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praise the glories of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Brahmins in society were never attentive to banking money for future retired life. When they were old invalids, they used to approach the assembly of the kings and simply by praising the glorious deeds performed by the kings, along with their wives, they would be provided with all necessities of life. Such brahmanas were not, so to speak, flatterers of the king, but the kings were actually glorified by their actions, and they were sincerely still more encouraged in pious acts by such brahmins in a dignified way. Lord Shri Krishna is worthy of all glories. And the praying brahmins and others were glorified themselves by chanting the glories of the Lord. The verse again, translation by Srila Prabhupada. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid Brahmins with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praise the glories of the Lord. Ukam karoti bachalam pangum longayate girim yat kripa tarham bande shri guru dinatarane. Just read the verse again. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly Brahmins and invalid Brahmins with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others praise the glories of the Lord. In this chapter, it's apparent that the residents of Dwarkadham were not ordinary people. Actually, it's said that they were all very advanced and pure devotees of the Lord, having taken birth just to see the Lord. Krishna, in relation with all the residents, and even during his entrance, were praised, but he reciprocated all the praise. Sometimes he embraced people, sometimes he bowed at their feet, sometimes he shook hands, sometimes he spoke in a very pleasing way. So there was always a form of reciprocity. This is a kind of a special rasa Krishna had with the residents of Dwarka. This rasa of reciprocity is a very advanced stage. In the five principal rasas, the rasa of conjugal rasa is considered to be the most, technically considered to be the most advanced one. And there are all kinds of people that were offering praises to Krishna. It's also mentioned in this chapter that not only were the ordinary residents of the highly learned people, but the ordinary people, there were singers, there were dramatists, there were panegyricists, artists, and all kinds of people offering praise. Some of the people offering praise were in the prostitute category. It's also said by Prabhupada that there were people that had such unadorable habits as prostitution. And we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the people who were transporting the Jagannath deities to the cart were of the pig class. So everyone is given opportunity, especially in these holy dhammas like Puri and Dwarka and Vrindavan Dham and Hastinapur, to greet the devotees. They were all very pleased. All the residents of Dwarka were very pleased to see the Lord who had been away in Hastinapur and Vrindavan and Kurukshetra. Prabhupada uses the word abroad. Generally, that's referred to as a foreign country, but also it means a very distant place. So when Krishna appeared in Dwarka, which he was the king of, the residents were very, very happy and very pleased. And they offered many different things. They offered prayers, they offered praise, they offered articles of kind of gifts. Prabhupada talks about them as the required articles. It's not that they could just offer anything they wanted, but they would offer things that were traditionally acceptable. They were required things, like they gave Krishna very unusual gifts, but gifts that were stated to be, not unusual, but gifts that were stated to be appropriate for giving to the Lord. When I was before I was a devotee, I was kind of a film addict, and I watched a film called Woman in the Dunes. Woman in the Dunes. It was a Japanese film. It was probably about 3 hours long, but it was a kind of a story about the character change in the main character. He was a kind of an adventurer, but somehow he wandered into this area of sand dunes, and there were only men in this region, and all the women lived in underground. In the dunes, and there was a big hole in which they could enter, and it would be a big spherical sort of dwelling, and somehow this adventurous man fell in through one of the holes, and there was a very attractive, very beautiful woman in this sequestered, secret underground kind of like a sphere or a cave. And somehow he becomes a victim of her beauty, and he falls in love with her, and they develop a relationship. But then after a while, he realizes that he's got to go. He's got to get out of this place. He's just stuck in this hole for his whole life. So he tries to get out through tying a bunch of sheets together and going out through the top of the hole, and that fails somehow. And he finally does manage to get out of the thing. And he tries to escape. And just as he's about to get away, the elders of the village, the men, they capture him and tell him they're going to put him back in the hole because he can't escape. Then they take him out to the seashore, and they tell him, now you have your choice. You can go and be free of this place and do whatever you want to do. And there's a whole huge world out there. They show him the horizon out of the sea, and it's very vast. Or you can remain in that. You can go back to that little hole in the ground and live there. So you have your choice to do whatever you want to do. And of course, it's just a movie, but in the film, he finally decides to go back to the hole and live in there. So it's kind of like what happens to us who are all victims in the material world. We're sort of trapped either by a beautiful woman or by the beautiful nature. Prabhupada calls in one of his purports beautiful nature Krishna's smile. It's kind of metaphorical, but it's kind of beautiful. And the sound of the birds to be like Krishna's voice. But this man is kind of a victim of Maya, and he goes back and lives a very sort of private, sequestered life instead of being the free, adventurous person that he was. So you see this, in the film I saw this gradual change of character of someone who is very, very independent and very adventurous to becoming very henpecked, sort of, downtrodden person, very limited and very conservative, living a life in a hole. Anyway, this is what I saw. And also, I read a story about, I think it was H.G. Wells who wrote it, about the Valley of the Blind. It's also about an adventurous person. Of course, it's fiction, but it's kind of an interesting story. This mountain climber somehow or other falls into what is, I mean, it's just a story, but the Valley of the Blind. And in the course of the story, he falls in love with a very beautiful woman. And he decides he wants to marry her and stay in this valley of the blind, and what's called the valley. We'll find out later why it's called the valley of the blind. And then the elders, the men, tell him that it's not possible for him to marry this woman. He's in some kind of illusion, they tell him. And they tell him that the illusion is because he's got these growths on the front of his face, their eyes, and they don't have eyes because they're all blind. That's why it's called the Valley of the Blind. So they say, if you allow us to remove these growths on the front of your face, then you can stay here and you can marry this woman and you can live in the Valley of the Blind. So he has to decide what to do. And anyway, just a story. But in the story, he opts for keeping his eyes, keeping his sight, and returning to his adventurous life as a mountain climber. It's got a sort of happier ending than the previous story about the woman in the dunes. But that's the story. And it's a kind of a short story, but it's the kind of things I used to read about a little bit before I was a devotee. And I kind of saw the contrast of the man who was a victim of the material energy and a person who has escaped being a victim of the material energy. Because he thought it was more important to keep his eyesight, ultimately, than be blinded. So that was kind of interesting. And Prabhupada mentions in this purport somewhere that it was very common in large cities like Dwarka that there were prostitutes, and that they served a very important function in society. The function that they served was to keep the men from polluting the women who were not prostitutes, who were wives of respectable people. And in his book, Bilba Mangal Thakur, he wrote a lot of books. He was very, very, very elevated and very famous. You may have heard of him, Bilba Mangal. I'm sure you've all heard of Bilba Mangal Thakur. He was his Bhartma Pradarshika, or initial guru, who put him on the path of Krishna consciousness, was a prostitute. He was very attached to this prostitute. And Prabhupada told me the story of how he was so attached to her that he left his father's funeral early, before it was over, before the funeral ceremonies were over, so that he could see his girlfriend, prostitute Chintamani. And the story is, and Prabhupada would tell it in a very dramatic way, that it was very heavily bucketing down rain that night, and it was very windy and very stormy. And all the rivers in that area were swollen and raging because of the excess of water. Somehow he managed to cross the stream to get to her house. The way he crossed the river, the raging river, in a very spate condition with very fast flowing water, was to grab onto what he thought was a log. It turned out to be a dead human body. But he used that dead body to ferry himself across to get to the other side of the river. And then he finally got to the home of Chintamani. And there was a big wall around her house, and it was all dark. So he thought, just somehow or other, I have to get over this wall. And somehow or other, there was a rope, he picked up what he thought was a rope to pull himself over the wall. But it turned out to be a very vicious cobra. Yeah, a live cobra, that is. And somehow he managed to get over without getting bitten by the snake, get over the wall and get to her personal chambers and wake her up. And she was just amazed that he came with this torrential downpour in the middle of the night, in the dark of the night, to come to her. And he said, she's told him that if you had the same kind of enthusiasm, the same kind of attachment and determination reach Krishna, then your life would be successful. Bilba Mangal was not an ordinary person. He took her advice to heart. And that very night he left her and went away to try to find his Lord in a very determined way. Then, of course, there's other aspects of the story which I won't go into, but he goes to Vrindavan. And he voluntarily blinds himself. That's the part of the story that I won't tell. He voluntarily blinds himself. You've probably seen this photograph or painting of Bilba Mangal Thakur playing an ektar, a one-stringed instrument. And with his eyes closed, and they're actually, because they're blinded, he blinded himself voluntarily. While he was in Vrindavan, or at the edge of Vrindavan, according to the Shastras, he lived for 700 years in that condition. And he was always, not always, but during that time, he was chanting the glories of the Lord on his ektar. And by, a young boy came and offered him some milk. And he realized after a while that that young boy who was coming every day to offer milk was actually the child, the baby Krishna. Not baby, but 5 or 6 year old Krishna. He came to realize that. And his writing is very popular among the acharyas. They Lila Shuka Bilba Mangal Thakur is glorified for his praise of Krishna as one of the acharyas. It's interesting that Prabhupada several times quotes various dictionaries. I made a list. I researched this, and he refers to dictionaries 7 times in the Bhagavad Gita, as it is 27 times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and 11 times in Chaitanya Charitamrita. These people, these lexicographers, people who wrote dictionaries, like Merriam-Webster, were kind of like acharyas in a sense, that they defined what words meant, and Prabhupada and other acharyas referred to them constantly. So they were like, in a sense, like acharyas, because they were authorities on what particular Sanskrit words would mean. They were, and even today in modern society, the dictionaries are often quoted as being authoritative as to how to pronounce words and what they mean and what the synonyms are and so on and so forth. One of the people who wrote extensively in my generation is a person named Bhagavad Swami. And he in one of his writings, he's a great scholar. I think he's in South India somewhere, Bhagavad Swami, yeah. And he translated, one of his functions is that he translated from Sanskrit, was to translate Vishwanath Chakravarti's Srimad Bhagavatam, his comments on Srimad Bhagavatam, his tiki on Srimad Bhagavatam. And in it, he in that book, or one of his writings, he coins a word called panegyricists. Panegyric is a kind of an unusual English word. I know a little bit about this literary stuff because I'm involved in literary work a lot. Is a kind of a panegyric is a phrase. It's kind of like when Krishna came to Dwarka, he was praised by professional speakers, by singers, by dancers, and he was also praised by, but it doesn't mention this in this book, but Bhagaswami mentions he was praised by panegyricists. They were people who always, like the people who praised the king, spoke about the glory. They were genealogists, and many people who were present saying various things. It's still commonplace in India when a great person, if there is such a thing anymore, comes to a place or a city that person is glorified by panegyricists. And what they do is they're not flattering, but they speak in praise of the people. Like panegyric is a praise. So a panegyricist is a person who sings or speaks of the glories of a person, who praises the person who's before them, who enters kind of either unannounced or announced, who suddenly appears, who's a very great person, panegyricist. So he coined that word, and it's not, I looked in the dictionaries, there's no such word as panegyricist, but there is a word that's panegyric, such a word as panegyric. That means a praise, or you know, something that's praised. In 1972, Srila Prabhupada was speaking in a kind of room conversation with a number of people, and one of the people asked him, "Do you believe in reincarnation?" And most of us, if we were asked a question like that, would say, "Well, yes, we do." And it's technically called transmigration of the soul. But Prabhupada's answer was, "It's not a matter of belief. It is a fact." One of the first things that I was became aware of, and it really stuck in my mind when I first heard Prabhupada speak, was, "I am not this body." So it's one thing to say, yes, we believe in reincarnation, but it's another thing to say it's not a matter of belief, it's a matter of fact. When a person says something is a matter of it's a fact, or it's a matter of fact, it's more than belief, it's what it is. It's what that person believes and what that person thinks, not believes, but what that person is convinced about. So I became convinced that maybe there's something to this idea that I'm not this body. Well, I don't know if I think I'm not this body, but I think he thinks that he's not this body, and maybe there is something about being not this body. So it's a kind of commonplace thing that transmigration of the soul and being not the body and karma are all interrelated to each other. There's a story about, I don't know if this is in one of Prabhupada's books, but it's been around for a while, you've probably heard it, about a man who lived in a big palatial mansion, and he had a number of sons. And one day, according to the story, a beggar came to this mansion and asked if he could get some help or entrance or a donation or whatever. And the father, who is the proprietor of the mansion, told his sons, he said, "We don't want it. We're not interested in this beggar. Just tell him to go away." Then some time passed, and the man died, the owner of the house, and his young boys grew up. And then one day, it so happened, according to the story, that a beggar came to the house and tried to get in or ask for a donation. And then a sage came along, or a seer, according to what the English writers call a sage, a seer, a person who could tell what a person was in their past life, and a person who would know the future, like Narada Muni is supposed to know the future. Anyway, this is just a story. This person came along and was refused entrance, or refused by the sons of the mansion to even come in or to get any kind of donation or any kind of help. And many spectators were surrounding the house at that time. And they saw this sage come by, and the sage started laughing all of a sudden. And then the people, the residents of the nearby village started saying, "Well, why are you laughing at a time like this? Here's a very poor man who just wants to get some kind of new clothing or food or anything, and you're laughing. Why are you laughing?" And then he told them that this man, this beggar, was actually, in his previous life, the proprietor, the man who owned the house, who wouldn't let a beggar in. And his karma was that he would get reborn as a beggar and would come to the same house and we would be refused entry or any help. So in that way, he was kind of ironically, not laughing hysterically, but ironically laughing, that this is, you know, kind of like nature's action of karma on the owner of the house who refused entry. So there are many stories about reincarnation. And if there's time, I'm going to read something about rasas. And this is a little bit related to the rasas, that when Krishna came into Dwarka, he had a different, all the people had different relations with him. There were the people who were singing his glories, there were his many wives, and he had 16,000 wives. So Prabhupada, in a lecture on the 7th of January 1973, talks about rasas. And I'll just read part of what he said. He said, rasa, Krishna is the reservoir of all rasas. Rasa is a very peculiar word. Rasa is a Sanskrit word, which doesn't exactly translate as relationship, as we often think. And sometimes devotees have said that you can have a rasa with Krishna, but you can't have a rasa with a bird, even though you're feeding it or something like that. So they have the idea that rasa is not exactly translated as relationship. It's a very, as Prabhupada says, rasa is a very peculiar word. Rasa, it may be translated, this is from a lecture on the 7th of January, 1973 in Bombay, can be translated into English as, quote, taste, end quote, as, quote, mellow, end quote, or as, quote, humor, end quote. So our relationship with Krishna, there is some taste. Without taste, we cannot continue our relationship with anyone. There must be some taste. So these rasas, or tastes, are 12 kinds. Primary rasa is the relationship between inert things and our, just like I am sitting on this chair. So the comfort I am feeling, that is the rasa, taste. We want very nice cushion, sitting position. So that tasting, that, quote, I am now comfortably seated, end quote, this is called Shanta Rasa. Then above the Shanta Rasa, there is Dasya Rasa. Dasya Rasa, just like my students, my disciples, they want to serve me, and I want to take service from them. This is also an exchange of rasa, a taste, Shanta Rasa. Similarly, next advanced stage is Sakya Rasa. Sakya Rasa means friendship, just like one is serving somebody. But if that service is very intimate, then there is rasa of friendship, dasa, sakya rasa. And that is advanced. And this is a speech, so it's not exactly in proper grammar. And then he hears some noise and he says, what is this sound? And then he continues by saying, when that is advanced, it becomes vatsalya rasa. Vatsalya rasa means the taste of sakya rasa. And the vatsalya rasa, parenthood, filial love. Then above this, there is Madhurya Rasa. Madhurya Rasa means the taste between husband and wife, lover and beloved. Then he talks something about a draft coming into the room. And he asks people to close the door. And then he says, so our relationship with Krishna or God, there are different rasas. Kamsa wants to kill Krishna. That is also another rasa. And I've talked about this before, how Arjuna was in the ghastly rasa with Krishna. There's that picture in the Bhagavatam about it shows Arjuna's trying to stop Krishna charging with the wheel of his chariot as if it were a chakra on the index finger of his right hand, charging to Bhishma. Bhishma had, the backstory is that Bhishma had agreed to kill all the Pandavas, including Arjuna, that day. And when Krishna saw that this was going to happen, he broke his promise that he would not take arms, he would not fight in the war. So when Bhishma saw this, he began to shoot arrows at him. And Krishna, although he doesn't have any blood in his transcendental body, was forcing blood to come out of the arrow wounds. So this is the rasa that Bhishma had with Krishna. Kind of an unusual, it's one of the secondary rasa. Then Prajuna reads, what are the rasas are neutrality, servitorship, and the indirect rasas are comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry. Prabhupada, what is that? Prajuna says, oh, comedy. Prabhupada, comedy, hasya rasa, creating a situation that everyone will laugh. That is also rasa, hasya rasa. But you mean compassion. Prabhupada, compassion. Suppose you find some poor man lying on the street. You feel compassionate. That is also another rasa, compassion rasa. Then, Prajuna, fear. Prabhupada, fear. Suppose you find a tiger or something ghostly. You become afraid. That is also rasa. Then, Prajuna, chivalry. Prabhupada, chivalry. Suppose you are fighting with an enemy. You are defeating him. You are killing him. That is also another rasa. Then, Prajuna, ghastliness. Prabhupada, ghastliness. That means after killing somebody, just like a butcher. The butcher is enjoying by killing, ghastly, just like the hunter was killing every animal. He was also enjoying some rasa. Then, Prajuna, wonder. Prabhupada, wonder. Wonder, you see something which is wonderful, astonishing. That is also rasa. In this way, according to Shastra, there are 12 rasas. 5 primary and 7 secondary. All these rasas are in Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is called Akila Rasamrita Sindhu. Akila Rasamrita. You can enjoy, you can have contact with Krishna with any of these rasas. Therefore, he is called Akila. We have written a small book, Krishna, the Reservoir of All Pleasure. Ghastly or wondrous rasas or chivalrous rasas, although they are not exactly like the 5 primary rasas, conjugal love, paternal affection, friendly love, just like Bhishma. Bhishma was enjoying the chivalry rasa when he decided that this is the day I must kill Arjuna. Either Krishna will have to speak his promise. Sometimes Bhishma is described as being in the chivalrous rasa, sometimes he is described as being in the ghastly rasa. So it is not good to take part partially in one party and neglect other. Of course, it was divided. Krishna divided himself, his soldiers one side and Krishna one side. He said, Duryodhana and Arjuna, that I shall remain neutral, but I am dividing my strength in this way. One side I am, the one side my soldiers. So Duryodhana thought that, what shall I do with Krishna? Better take his shoulders. What shall I do with Krishna? Better take his soldiers. So Duryodhana thought that, what shall I do with Krishna? Better take his soldiers. So he took the soldiers on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna said that, I want you. Just like the same thing happened in general politics when Gandhi started the big movement, non-cooperation movement. So he selected some very big men of India, big, big lawyers like C.R. Das, Motilal Nehru. So C.R. Das at that time, about 50 years ago, he was earning 50,000 rupees per month by his legal practice. He said that, Gandhiji, you take all my money, but let me practice. Don't ask me to boycott the British court. But that was one of his programs. So Gandhiji said, no, I don't want your money. I want you. And actually, that was very effective. So similarly, Arjuna also decided that I don't want your soldiers. I want you. So these are different rasas. So the fact is, the idea is that you can make your relationship with Krishna with any kinds of rasas. Because beyond these 12 rasas, there is no other rasa. These 12 rasas are complete, the primary and 7 secondary, direct and indirect. Therefore, our Goswami's instruction is that you establish your relationship with Krishna. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayat. Somehow or other, you establish. You fix up your mind in Krishna. Just like Kamsa, he fixed up his mind on Krishna, how to kill him. He was always thinking. He was also Krishna conscious of that. But he was thinking, as soon as Krishna will take birth, I shall immediately kill him. And he was anxious, whether he is born. So when his sister Devaki was pregnant, he was thinking of that pregnant. Krishna within the womb, when he will take birth. That was also Krishna conscious. That kind of Krishna consciousness is not bhakti. That indirect Krishna consciousness, that is not bhakti. That is attachment for Krishna. That will also give benefit. Just like Kamsa and other enemies of Krishna, they were killed by Krishna, but they got immediately salvation. So the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami teaches that even if you be attached to Krishna in adverse condition, in opposite condition, that is also good because Krishna is there. The example can be given in a different way. Just like sandalwood. Sandalwood, you rub it in any way, standing or horizontal. In this way, the Pope will come out and it will give you comfort. It will give you relief. Similarly, you make your contact with Krishna Anukulyena. Especially, it is recommended Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana from the Manja Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, 19th chapter, 167th verse, favorably. Especially, it is recommended Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana favorably. So all the residents of Dwarka, even though they were of different conditions and different situations, they praised Krishna because they were in various different types of rasas, different relationships with Krishna. So that is part of the beauty of the chapter of Krishna entering Dwarka after a long time. He was praised by the residents who were of different categories, and they experienced different rasas. So that's all I had to talk about today. Any comments or questions, or anybody want to add anything? Yes?
On Dwarka, on Dwarka, when I was taken there in the 80s, had a very good fortune to go there. We were shown a hole in the ground outside of Dwarka where Tilak was taken from. Mm. We were told, well, I got the understanding that this was the body of Radharani. Mm. Two questions. How would you describe Radharani's? Is it a rasa with Krishna? And is this a fact that this is where the Tilak, and this is where Radharani's body would be? Mean that she returned to the earth then?
Well, there's different descriptions of how Radharani left the world. What was your first question? Oh, what kind of relationship did Radharani have with Krishna? I think, well, as far as I know, it was conjugal rasa. It was the rasa of intimacy, of the highest kind of intimacy, which is also kind of technical. And as far as Radharani leaving this world, one of the descriptions, I think it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is that she asked her associates to wrap her arms around the tamal tree because she would die, somehow being immersed in Krishna consciousness. As far as the hole in Dwarka being the remnants of her body, I don't know anything about that. Maybe Bhakti Radha Maharaj knows something about it. I've never heard that interesting story. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Before our breakfast gets cold? Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, one of the things that Prabhupada said about the Srimad Bhagavatam is that we should read it every day, and not only just read it mechanically, but to study it, and that it should be recited in the class every day, which we're doing today. So it's not an ordinary book. It is a book, but it's not an ordinary book. It's a treatise that was glorified in many ways by the Goswamis and other people, Jiva and Sanatana and Rupa. And it's a book that requires many, many hours and lifetimes and weeks and years of study. Not an ordinary book. Prabhupada is on record of saying, my only complaint is that people don't read my books. I'm working very hard, getting up early in the morning to write these books. I'm working very hard, sweating many tears of blood, sweat, and tears to make these books available to all of you, and you're not reading them. So what's the good of it? Just going out and selling them if we don't read them? I mean, what if people say to you, what is this? And I said, I don't know. I just sell the books. I don't read them. I just sell them. I said, what's the good of that? So they're meant to be read and studied. And in the Nectar Devotion series of lectures, he says that you should read Nectar of Devotion. He had rendered it into English as the Nectar of Devotion. It was called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu originally by Rupa Goswami. And it's interesting that Prabhupada was gazing out of the opening in his kutir, so to speak, in Radhadamara temple at the samadhi of Rupa Goswami constantly. And the interesting thing about this is that Rupa Goswami actually was not his Diksha guru, but he was getting inspiration constantly from Rupa Goswami, from seeing that samadhi, and it gave him inspiration to carry out the order of his guru. It's also said that when Chintamani spoke to Bilba Mangal Thakur about taking up the Krishna consciousness with determination. That she was, that his Diksha Guru, Somagiri Swami, was speaking through her. And so she became his, although she was a Brahma Darshika Guru, she became, in a sense, his principal guru. Anyway, just thought I would throw that in. Any other comments or questions or any points anyone wants to make? I'm trying to make this a little bit interactive. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
These are colors. You got scratch a t-shirt.